Hey, how's it going, everyone? This is Joel from the Holy Mountain Printing Podcast. I just want to let you guys know that there might be some technical difficulties throughout this episode, but we try to clean up as much as we can. Do not let that deter you from checking this out. This is going to be a great episode with the one and only GJ7L, who we also have to thank for our amazing fucking intro. So let's go ahead and let's get into some of those soundtrack picks.
Anybody home? What kind of party is this anyway?
A very strange party, if you'll pardon the expression.
Radio General Erko.
Yes, sir, but that's not what's so peculiar.
Put it on the bridge speakers, Lieutenant.
Pay more attention.
DJ 7L.
I thought it might be static, but not on every channel. Tend to sound like...
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Right there on the other side of the hill.
Hear me and hear me.
Yep. Wait a minute, what's that?
I demand an explanation.
Look at that one, bigger than the rest. He looks like...
Invasion by creatures from space confirmed. New York City may be the next objective.
Just stop.
And get out of here.
Getting some very strange reports.
Uh-oh.
From
Sinbad.
In what way strange?
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Listen to this!
Welcome to the Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.
Our guest is DJ7L from Czarface.
Hello, hello. How are you guys?
And we proposed the idea of you and us each collectively bringing our favorite soundtracks and then and showing them to each other and discussing why those were ours. So we narrowed it down to our five favorite soundtracks and then one set. So it's five 12-inch LPs and then one 7-inch.
Yes.
And so now someone's got to go first. Who's going first?
I'll go first. I got all right, let me see. I will go.
Let's save 7-inch for last. That's the
Sure. There's really no order, I guess. So like there's not really by favorite or by anything other than just what I have in front of me. So I think one of the probably big ones would be the Death Wish soundtrack. Herbie Hancock did it with he had the Headhunters backing him. That one's probably, I got that in the early 90s from a store out here, the Record Exchange in Salem. And that probably kicked off, like, you know, my fascination with soundtracks, I think. It's an amazing soundtrack. You can play it from start to finish and really, you're not skipping much on it. Like some soundtracks, you know, if you're not watching the movie, the music sometimes can seem out of place or might not actually keep you interested, whereas this one, I think, you know, just from a musical standpoint, it's outstanding. And it was a big record, I think, too, for producers in the 90s to sample from. But beyond that, I mean, for me, I just, you know, I don't know. I just think it's awesome. You know, and it's like Herbie Hancock did a handful of soundtracks around that time, and this one's probably like my favorite. So, like, you know,
we actually in the front office have one of the original lobby cards from the original run of the movie in theaters.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
That's great.
What you said earlier too, I thought about that a lot when I was picking, like, because there's scores that are great in the context of the movie, but without the movie, then you're like, this isn't like Beyond the Black Rainbow is one where, like, in the movie, I love the music. And then I got so excited when I got the vinyl for that and I put it on. And I was like, this isn't as good without the movie.
Yeah.
That's an awesome pick.
That'd probably be one of the off the top of my head, that's always one I go to for soundtracks. You know what I mean? It's stood the test of time too, for sure.
Yeah, that's a classic movie. All right, well, I'm going to go with Black Hole soundtrack. Yeah, that's one that both of us are super, super fucking into. and have been talking about a lot lately. So I was like, this is a no-brainer. This is actually like probably the first thing I picked. So
yeah. That one's awesome, actually.
Yeah. This is, the vinyl on this is paper fucking thin. It's almost like a flexi.
I'm drawing a blank on what they used to call that, but a Dynaplex? Is that what that is?
I don't know. I mean, it's supposed to just be a 12-inch rack. I mean, it's just supposed to be.
I gotcha.
When you take it out and you hold it, it like bows in your hand. Like, like, this is literally like a flexi, except it's 12.
Yeah.
But it sounds great. And it's, I mean, this is, for a sci-fi movie and for a Disney movie, this is as spooky as a soundtrack could fucking sound. I mean, super creeped out. Other than the, you know, the very Disney opening that sounds like any sci-fi movie. After that, this thing gets real creepy fast.
Yeah.
I had the pleasure of rewatching it recently, and I forgot that long 3 to 5 minute prelude where it's just like this really bombastic a prelude, you know, music for 5 minutes and like just a completely black screen.
Okay. I might have to add that to my list of quarantine viewing. I haven't seen that in a while.
Wife swears that she hates sci-fi, which is an absurd thing to say. I hate sci-fi. Like, it's a big genre to just decide you fucking hate.
Sure. Yeah.
I insisted she watch this and she loves it. So, I mean, okay. It's so good. The lady who says she hates sci-fi fucking loves it. And then the main title, and then they bring it back at the end. And then it's also used in the Zero Gravity is just like this. They like keep bringing that same super spooky fucking cue up you kind of see in this movie and in the score. It feels like whoever made Event Horizon was watching this too.
Oh man, another one.
Yeah, that's a great one. But this is my first no-brainer pick, and I had
good,
because we both fucking love this one.
Nice.
Now, let me ask this, you know, since you guys, you're the two big record collectors. I am not. Now, I imagine you, 7L, as a DJ, you probably have a ridiculously large collection.
It's okay. It's all right. Yeah. It's pretty good. It's pretty good size.
Now, I'm sure you have like one set of records that's, you know, for your job, and then you probably have one that's probably just like, you know, your personal pleasure collection, or like, is it all kind of intermixed?
Sure, yeah. I think now that they're intermixed a little more, you know, especially over the last like kind of five to 10 years, I think like slowly it's just kind of like they've become one in a sense. I've sold a lot of records over the years. I still do. I have a record store in Somerville, called Vinyl Index. You can find us at vinylindex.com. It's a quick plug. But I've sold a lot of my records through there. All the ones I care about, which kind of would fall into the soundtrack, libraries, you know, all the, you know, old funk and soul stuff that I, you know, grew up collecting. That stuff I've kind of all capped, all the jazz records. You know, so that's kind of been the core of what I have. And a big bulk of it is soundtracks for sure. You know, soundtracks and library records definitely is like, you know, a majority of the collection that I kept now, I think, you know.
Now, do you recall like what the first, I guess, soundtrack you bought on vinyl? Like, what was that?
It might have, well, I've had ones before. You know, I definitely had Star Wars and, you know, stuff like that, like the more popular ones. But I do think the Death Wish one, which I probably got, I want to say in like 91 or 92. I was a junior in high school. That's one that I got that was different. I've heard of the movie. I don't think I saw it at that point. I might have seen it, Death Wish. But I remember just buying it because I was buying, you know, Herbie Hancock records at the time. He had done the soundtrack, and then when I came across it, it, you know, it just opened up kind of this, you know, usually, you know, this kind of world, I guess, of you know, of soundtracks and like you know, the kind of gems you can find on them. You know what I mean? So I do think it was Death Wish that was the first big one that I was like, oh, I got to buy soundtracks now. You know, that became more of the focus. And obviously, as I got older, I got more into movies and film and, you know, and, you know, expanding my, you know, interests in, you know, in that stuff.
Okay. So. I mean, now let me ask you this. If you feel comfortable asking it, you know, answering it, go right ahead. But how many records would you estimate you have in your collection?
Oh, now I don't know, like somewhere around seven, I want to say. I used to, I at one point I had like, I probably double that. I probably had like 14 or so thousand, 15,000 maybe at one point. And then, like I said, over the years, I definitely have been, you know, selling a bunch. Yeah, so definitely it kind of, you know, now it's down to the core of just stuff that I personally like, you know what I mean? You know, I for a while I was definitely DJing a lot in clubs, so a lot of the records would be kind of more club records or stuff like, you know, like Jay-Z 12 inches, stuff like that, that at this point, you know, I have Serato and stuff like that, like, you know, for DJing, whatever, I don't need the actual 12 inch anymore, you know, like I kept all like Trap Called Quest, Ultra Magnetic MCs, all those kind of albums I kept for sure for hip hop, but everything else for the most part I pretty much sold. So, you know, yeah. So yeah, about 7,000 I think is around about where it's at right now. You know?
Okay. All right. That's impressive.
I would have the hardest time delineating between what's I would be okay with selling.
Yeah, I think once I started to do it, it definitely became easier. Like I said, all the records, they kinda I guess mean something to me more on a personal level, I've kept. And then, like I said, you know, Cameron albums and stuff like that, albums that I love and like, you know, Dipset, like I definitely listen to those, but I don't necessarily need it on vinyl. So stuff like that, once I started chipping away at that stuff, it became a little easier to like, you know, just make space for other stuff that I, you know, cause I'm still constantly buying records and, trading records with people and stuff like that. So I always have a kind of a fresh intake of records coming in. So to make room for that, you know, I guess I'd rather, you know, kind of have things a little more neatly organized and not have basically every room have records in it. You know, now it's down to like three rooms, whereas before it was like every room except the kitchen had walls of records. So now I think it's, you know, I can breathe a little easier now, I think, with the way my apartment's set up. So, you know.
My wife tried to come at me with some one in, one out nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, it doesn't work that way. Like, I don't, yeah. I don't know. One in, one out is absurd. Like, every time I want a record, I got to kick something out. That's, I was like,
I think I'm like that with sneakers a little bit. I have, you know, X amount of sneakers and I don't get any new ones until whatever. One ran its course and I'm throwing them away or donating them and I'll get a new pair, you know. That's just a way for me to kind of stop, I guess, buying sneakers. You know, something I don't think I need at this point in life. So,
right.
You know, I made that decision a while ago.
To it.
But records, it's tough. Yeah, records are hard. Records is a constant. Battery's low. Records are a constant. Constantly buying them. So, yeah.
All right. Well, what's your second pick?
It's probably a tie. Somewhat of a tie between 3 Days of the Condor and the Friends of Eddie Coyle. They're both by Dave Grusin. I picked them both together. I mean, definitely 3 Days of the Condor is probably one of my, with Death Wish, is definitely one of an early soundtrack that I got that kind of remained like super important to me. Over the years. So 3 Days of the Condor came out in 75 and the Friends of Eddie Coyle came out in 73, but they're grouped in this, you know, for this particular slot. They're just, you know, they sound very, very similar. I always felt they were from like maybe the same session or something like that. You know, cause a lot of the musical cues I think are really close and, you know, I know Tom Scott is on 3 Days of the Condor. I don't know if he's on the Friends of Eddie Coyle, but there's like a lot, I feel like the personnel and whatnot is the same, you know, with that. And like, you know, like you were saying before, I think the music complements the movie perfectly. And it's also one that you can listen to just on its own, you know, and that's 3 Days of the Condor. Same with Friends of Eddie Coyle, but you know, the main one I want to focus on, I guess, would be 3 Days of the Condor. And it's an awesome movie. So
I've actually never seen Guardians of the Condor.
It's really good. Yeah, it's on Prime right now. Actually, well, I think you got to rent it. I don't think it's free, but it's one of my favorite movies actually. So yeah, it's actually one that I use to fall asleep to. So because I have a hard time sleeping, so I try to have a movie on and I can follow the dialogue to kind of shut my brain off. But that's good. Like David Gresson, he's done soundtracks over the years, a lot with Sidney Pollack, who directed the movie. He did even like The Firm or something like that with Tom Cruise. It's like a random, I guess, example, but the soundtrack's actually pretty good and it plays throughout pretty much the whole movie, which is interesting. You know, it's not really much breathing time to not have it. So like, I think their combo, they've done other stuff together too. The Yakuza and stuff like that, but their combo, I think, works good together for whatever reason. But definitely that would be one I'd highly recommend to watch. Absolutely.
I love The Friends Eddie Coyle, so I'll definitely
put that on the list. That one takes place in Boston, so that was a good bonus for a local hometown reference. But yeah, a lot of the music's just the same, and a lot of similarity, I guess. It's not saying it's the same, I guess, is unfair, but there's a lot of similarities, I think, between the two soundtracks, even though they're 2 years apart, which I didn't kind of pick up on recently. I kind of thought they were maybe came out in the same year, and that like somehow The Friends of Eddie Coyle just got the scraps of 3 Days of the Condor maybe or something like that, but they're actually 2 years apart, and The Friends of Eddie Coyle came out before. I think more people are more familiar with 3 Days of the Condor.
I've started noticing everything like in the later part of my life here where I'm like trying to look at the dates on everything and figure out like you just did with that.
Yeah. Same. Yeah.
And now I want to know how old was I when this happened and what yada.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
The other night we watched a movie and I said to my wife, "Oh, this came out a year before I was born. Why that matters, I don't fucking know." But now
when you can put a timeline on stuff, it like, you know, it gives you a little bit of perspective of the world at the time it came out. You know, like it's always interesting to kind of piece it into the time period it's from. You know what I mean? That's why it's like I was saying with Death Wish, like, you know, I watched it pretty recently and it's a pretty wild movie. I hadn't seen it in a while, but it's kind of crazy, you know.
I just recently rewatched the first three, all of which are fucking wild.
Okay, my next pick is the soundtrack to Ghost Dog: Way of the Samurai.
Oh shit, nice. Yes, nice.
Soundtrack's fine. I like the soundtrack, but you know, this is the fucking score is where it's at.
Yeah, so. Yes. Yeah.
And I think him and I both agree. What I love about this score is that this is the RZA doing what he does in the form of a score instead of trying to make a movie score.
Yes. Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's absolutely fucking beautiful. It's magnificent.
It's crazy. Yeah. It's really crazy. So that's a good call on that one.
And I also have to point out that's the limited ultra rare Japanese.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. Yeah. The U.S. pressing is just the regular. It's just the Ghost Dog cover. It's the same as the poster. I mean, that was actually. I mean, the movie's really good. I don't know. I hear what you're saying. Obviously, the score is what's important, I think, or overshadows the movie a little bit.
Love the movie too.
Yeah, yeah.
But the score is unbelievable.
No, it's crazy. It's definitely crazy.
All right. So what you got for the third pick?
Third pick. I have like a lot of picks, so I'm trying to.
There is a giant stack of records that I pulled for this that painfully narrowed down to five. And I threw it out and
yeah.
My wife came in when I was playing the Texas Chainsaw Massacre soundtrack and was like, "Why would you put this in?" Like, you could put something good in, why would you put this in? And I was like, "But I love this."
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, there's a lot, like, you know, stuff like the Twin Peaks soundtrack. I mean, I think anybody who somewhat knows me knows that Twin Peaks is a very important part of my life, I think. but like, you know, stuff like the Twin Peaks soundtrack or, you know, I don't even know, Trouble Man by Marvin Gaye or, you know, even the Serpico sound. Like, there's a lot of soundtracks, I think, that like when I was going through my collection, I was like, oh, this one's awesome, I have to mention this, or, you know, but then I'll find another one that I'm like, well, this one probably might be a little more important to me, but then I'm like, I don't want to leave out the classics, you know, Dirty Harry, or, you know, any of those things, you know, Call Me Mr. Tibbs, whatever it is, there's a lot. I feel like there's a lot out there. But the next pick, I think, would probably be Fantastic Planet. So that came out in 73. You know, it was done by Alain Goergi. I think I'm pronouncing his name properly, a French gentleman. He did a lot of stuff with Serge Gainsbourg back in the 60s. I mean, the movie itself is unbelievable. If you guys have seen it, it's yeah, the pairing between the way it's animated, or it's not even really animated. I guess it's like stop motion animation. The story it tells, and just the way the music is, you know, tied into it. This one's probably my favorite soundtrack. If I had to be like the one I could just listen to endlessly, would be definitely be that one. Fantastic Planet, or you know, I don't want to massacre the French title. You know, it's also known as Wild Planet. So, La Planète Sauvage, I guess, would be my French attempt. But that one, this one in particular, would be you know, it's been sampled a bunch. I think it was first used on Big Pun's Capital Punishment. The Beatnuts, the Juju track that he did, I think he sampled. Not I think, he definitely sampled it. But like, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the song right now. But like Madlib has used it a ton and stuff like that. It's definitely become, you know, and it's, I think it was in, what's that? It was in The Cell.
That is actually my only reference point. I've never seen it. I only
know. You have to. It's like, yeah, it's, yeah. Jennifer Lopez is like smoking a joint.
Right.
And at the time, I had seen the movie at that point, and you know, I thought it was a very, very random, but much. I don't know. It was good. It was definitely a good inclusion in that movie. And The Cell is a great movie too. So yeah, but that would be that's the third one I'm throwing up on the dock today.
All right, so I'm not gonna blow it this time. The Maniac soundtracks.
Oh, dope.
I twofered on this one and went 1980 and then 2012. Yep. I don't know if that's cheating, but that's, I couldn't have picked between them, so fuck it.
Who did the remake? Was that Cliff? Who did Cliff Martinez? Who did the music for that?
It was Rob who did.
Yeah,
Revenge.
Yeah.
Gretel. Did you see Gretel and Hansel yet?
I haven't seen it yet. No, I haven't.
It's fucking fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And he did the score for that. I ordered they put up pre-sales for that on vinyl, so I got ordered that. But
okay,
yeah.
Yeah, that one in particular, that's really dope. Yeah, the remake. I really love the music to that. I never got it. The original is obviously, the poster's iconic. Yeah. You know. That's a good one. Yeah, I never got. I should actually. I'm gonna make a note and probably try to. I'm gonna grab it after this. Yeah, that was one for like newer soundtrack stuff that I just like meant to get. Never got around to getting it. But I'm glad you brought that up, because that's yeah, I remember a lot, like loving it a lot, and the movie's crazy. So.
Yeah, both of them. It's awesome too, because they remaking such a grimy fucking
movie. Yeah.
And then flipping it. It's just as scary, but it's like flipped, you know,
it's like, yeah, exactly. It's
like, you know, like bright and neon and slick, and Elijah Wood as opposed to Joe Spinella's, of course, Night and Fucking Day.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was interesting seeing Elijah Wood in you know, in a different kind of world, I guess, than Hobbits. You know?
Right. Frodo, no.
I know.
No, let me ask both of you guys this. I mean, do you have any instances or in your collection, you know, movie scores or soundtracks, like you love the music, but you hate the movie?
I got an easy one. The Witch.
What's that? Okay.
I fucking hated that movie.
Did you?
I hated it. It, like, nothing happened. It had two really fucking cool scenes, and the rest of it was just
I hear you. Okay, yeah.
But the score is absolutely fucking terrible and magnificent. And so I own that record, and I love that record, and I play it all the time. But that movie sucks. I know that's, like, the most unpopular opinion. I know everyone in the world just thinks I'm an asshole, but that movie fucking stunk.
I hear you.
In fact, that movie I just referenced, Gretel and Hansel, that Rob did the score for.
Yeah.
When I walked out of the theater, I said to my wife, "That's everything I thought The Witch was going to be."
No kidding. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So I got to see that. I got to see that, the Hansel and Gretel then.
That would be mine. What do you got?
I mean, yeah, I can't. I don't know. I don't think I have one for that that I can think of right now off the top of my head. I mean, there's definitely a lot of soundtracks I love that I've never seen the movie to, but that wouldn't necessarily like qualify as an answer for the question. That's a good question. I'm going to think about that, and we'll make a little edit at the end of this to add it in. That's a good question. I can't. I don't know. Man, I do not know, man. Tough one. There's like Mirage that Quincy Jones did. I mean, the movie was okay. I guess I didn't dislike it, so I guess that wouldn't. Yeah, I don't think I have an answer for you. It's a good one. You stumped me. You know, it's good. I like that.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to derail you.
No, it's not at all. Not at all. That's a good way. You know, it's a good way of looking at it. You know, because I think even a bad movie, not bad, but a movie that's, you know, like B-type movies, you know, that technically could be considered bad, still have that charm to it that you like it. So I guess I can't say that I don't have feelings like I do like The Witch, you know. Like The Tourist Trap, I think it's a dysfunctional movie, but I love the soundtrack. And I think the movie has a charm to it with how kind of over the top it is with like trying to be scary, you know what I mean? But again, I don't dislike it, so I don't know. I gotta think on that.
Well, see, I guess for me, it's just one of those things, like knowing Danny for as long as I have, and I got my other friend Jason. I mean, I don't know a lot of people that collect horror movie scores or soundtracks and stuff. Yeah. It's just like, I can't imagine just hanging around the house and like, I want to listen to the soundtrack to Phantasm. And it's like, there's nothing soothing about that.
That was going to be one of my picks. That's actually a really good soundtrack.
I got in mind too. That's Leaning Against the Wall. It's sad.
That's one, like, you know, I think initially I had like, okay, these are an easy five I'm going to do. And then like today when I was pulling them, the actual records, I was like starting to see more. And then I kind of was like, well, let me go a little more left field with stuff and talk about records that, you know, soundtracks that maybe aren't mentioned a lot. And then I kind of ended up back to my original, close to the original five I had. Cause I mean, at the end of the day, you know, certain soundtracks are iconic for a reason. And if they're important to you and you like them, you know, you should talk about it. But Phantasm's fantastic, actually, really good.
Well, and then you asked me the same, he asked me the same question when I about video game soundtracks, and he was like, I can't see you just sitting around chilling listening to this.
Yeah.
And he was sitting in a chair at my house and I put it on, you know, I think it was a Street Fighter soundtrack, and he was like, oh yeah, that's how you do it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's some Godzilla soundtracks that are like that where it's split between music, but like a majority of it will lean heavy on dialogue and, you know, Godzilla sounds, you know what I mean? You know, and sometimes even at the store at Vinyl Index, I'd just be playing it in the background, and it's actually, you know, I guess soothing might not be the best description, but yeah, you can kind of just zone out and do your work, and you know, you have this barrage of dialogue and sounds and, you know, creatures screaming at you in the background, but it makes sense.
Actually, almost brought Godzilla versus the Smog Monster.
Nice. Yeah, that's the thing. I made a quick note of something, and I had, right before we hopped on, and I had all these like question marks next to stuff like anime and, you know, Godzilla, stuff like that. I was like, you know, I didn't even pull any out for this, you know, and those I think I have, especially Godzilla, I have like the most copies of as far as pressings and, you know, from different countries and whatnot. And, you know, obviously there's a lot to choose from between all the stuff they've done over the years. So. Yeah, I don't know where we're at in the conversation, but so yeah, two more, right? Is that what I have? All right,
you got another 12 inch and a 7 inch.
That's a tough one, then. Really? Let me see, I did. Yeah, I guess I did, right?
This is your fourth year,
and you guys can also do like honorable mentions if you want at the end.
I mean, well, one I think in particular that I've always loved is Morricone's Violent City. Let me see. I had this one. Where is it? You know, right here. Is it showing up? Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
All right, sorry. It's from 71. it's I don't think it's streaming anywhere, and I haven't seen it in a while. I mean, the movie's actually, it's kind of whatever. You know, there's definitely a charm to it. But I wanted to have some Morricone in here somewhere. It's also known as like the family, I think, or something like that, you know, or Città Violenta is the Italian. I mean, he obviously has hundreds of iconic, I think, soundtracks, you know, the Dollars Trilogy, stuff like that. But I think, you know, this was, you know, the early 70s stuff he did for me is his favorite period. Well, he did a lot of good stuff in the 80s. He did, like, you know, The Thing, obviously. He did The Chosen. He did Hateful Eight score, I thought was unbelievable. The Untouchable score he does really good. But I think for my personal favorite, I would go with Violent City for Ennio Morricone mentioned, because I wanted to get him in one of the five.
So my next pick was the 30 Days and Night soundtrack by Brian Reynolds. Oh,
that's awesome.
Which is a fucking fantastic, scary ass movie. But the soundtrack is, less actual like musical score and more just terrifying fucking noises with drums over it. Like, I love this because it's like closer to like something that Sun or Merzbow would do. It's like literally like borderline a noise album, and it's like what I figured.
Yeah, like. Have you heard the It Follows soundtrack?
Yes. I didn't bring that because I heard you mention it recently, and I was like, I'm not going to roll up to this with a record he already mentioned.
No, it's probably one I like a lot, but I didn't pull it for today. But it's probably in the same line. I haven't heard 30 Days of Night, the soundtrack, in a while, but it's probably in the same vein, right? Kind of like...
Yeah, it's like... Right. Like I think I was thinking about earlier, and I assume that this is probably what it sounds like there in Barrow, Alaska, as opposed to this is just the terrifying noise that living there sounds like.
Oh, man.
But this is magic. The terrifying movie and an absolutely terrifying fucking score. So.
Oh, dope.
See, that movie, I remember the soundtrack for it. It kind of betrayed me because I remember the early advertisements. It was like they were playing a lot of, what was it, Apocalypse Please by Muse.
Okay.
And I remember really liking that song. And I was like, oh, I need to listen to more Muse. And it was like, nope. No, you don't.
That's not it.
Muse is like the proto Imagine Dragons.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Well, let me ask you guys this, you know, just a little banter. I think we talked about, I asked you, you know, soundtracks you like, movies you hate. What was the last movie? Now, I don't know what your criteria is, 7L, as far as like, you know, going out and buying stuff. Like, is it one of those things where, you know, you like the composer and you're specifically looking for the scores or whatnot, or, you know, is it a case of you watching this movie? It's like, oh, I love this movie. I love this soundtrack. I got to go out and buy it. Like, what was the last thing that either one of you guys, like, movie you saw, and you're like, I got to go buy the score for that.
The last two movies I saw that where the movie was over and I was ordering the score before I was even home would have been Only Lovers Left Alive and Under the Skin. That's the last few times where I was
Under the Skin, that's a good one.
Are both fucking, I didn't even get home before I ordered those.
Really?
I was in a parking lot of the movie theater ordering them on my phone. Those are, and you know, those are two that I love both of those. And actually both of those were on played over this weekend and on the list.
Oh, nice.
It was like three, because I Only Lovers Left Alive, and of course I brought Ghost Dog, and the Dead Man soundtrack was on the list too, but I decided against that last minute.
I think the Only God Forgives. I really liked the movie, and like the music I thought was really great in it. So I don't know. Like, a lot of the times I think when it is a movie that I like, I just end up buying the soundtrack regardless, whether it's really because of the music or just because I like the movie. But that was one where I was like, oh, I gotta go buy the soundtrack to this. You know, but that, it's like, that's Cliff Martinez. So like a lot of his stuff I end up getting anyways. Like I really like Solaris and,
which one?
Oh, the remake he did the music for, which I actually like better than the original, which I know is an unpopular, opinion to have, but, I love the remake of it. I thought it was incredible. And the soundtrack to that's awesome too. So that could be, I don't know, that could be one. But again, I really like both of those movies, so I think they just go hand in hand, you know. There's definitely movies I've watched that, you know, to I guess to more answer your question, that yeah, I'm like, oh, you know, like the score with Robert De Niro and I'm drawing a blank on his name, the Hulk, the original Hulk. Thank you. Yes. Like Howard Shore did that. I think that's a really good soundtrack. You know, like it, I wouldn't really think it would be something I'd care to get. It's actually not on vinyl or anything like that, I don't think. But I do remember I've seen it like a handful of times, and I saw it recently and I was like, dude, this soundtrack's actually really good. I should go get this. You know what I mean? So that would be an example of one, but I actually never got the soundtrack to it because I think it's only on CD or something like that. Same with like The Game, the Fincher film. Like I really like the music in that. Mm. And I've seen that movie like, I don't know, probably 100 times. And I think there was a point too where I was like, oh, you know what? I really like the music that's going on here. It's like, you know, very atmospheric or whatever. But that also is not on vinyl. So
it's crazy in this day and age with the amount of movies soundtracks that were pressed on vinyl that there is anything to not be had.
Well, there's, you know, like it's funny. I saw something recently. It was like a Hilary Duff movie. I don't know which one. I sent it to a friend of mine. Because it was like now available. I can't recall the title of the movie, but I was like, this is how ridiculous it's become with like repressing a vinyl that they're repressing this on vinyl. But yeah, like you still find, I feel like, yeah, like you're kind of saying, they've done so much, like everything's on vinyl, you know, from not even just soundtracks, just everything. But you do find pockets of stuff here and there that is not on vinyl, like the Blowout soundtrack. The De Palma movie, it is on vinyl. I have it. It's a Japanese pressing, but I'm pretty sure, and I haven't been able to find any proper confirmation on this, but I'm pretty sure the soundtrack is the vinyl is a remake of the music in the movie, and it's like different because the movies actually, it's one of my favorite movies. I think everything I've referenced so far is one of my favorite movies, so that's probably an overuse statement in this, but with Blowout, I don't think there's been a proper release for the actual music that's in the movie on vinyl. So that would be a good one. I think that one would be like a slam dunk for somebody to do. And Body Double, which is another De Palma one, which the movie's kind of whatever, but I really love the music in that one particularly. And that's not on vinyl at all, actually. It's on like double CD or something like that. So that would be one that I think would be really good on vinyl. You know, that's by Pino Donaggio. He did a ton of stuff with Brian De Palma. So he did like Carrie. He did, you know.
You think that when they were mining, because they were, I mean, during the boom of this, you know, releasing soundtracks and vinyl, and they were mining every single fucking film.
Yeah.
Giving soundtrack, you know, vinyl treatment to soundtracks that arguably should have never been bothered with.
Yes.
How is there not, you know, Blowout on vinyl? That doesn't even
make sense. Well, like I said, well, they haven't done a repress of it since it came out. But like I said, there's not the only, but I think the main version is the Japanese pressing. And I don't know if maybe, you know, the movie over there, they just changed the music in it. They did their own, you know, had their own kind of cover band doing, you know, like a J-pop version of, not pop, but, you know, version of the score or what. Because I think in Death Proof, Tarantino used some of the music for one of the scenes. And that's actually, like, it's not actually on the Blowout soundtrack, because I remember when I, after seeing the movie, I was like, oh, I know that music, and I remembered it from, that's kind of how I put pieces together. I remembered it from Blowout, and I went home and put on the soundtrack, and it was like listening to it front to back, and I was like, I know it's on here somewhere, it has to be on here, and, you know. And then after time I realized that just the soundtrack was just slightly different. You know, that would be a great one. That would be a really good one. And I think that Body Double would be a great one too. I mean, that movie's kind of pretty bonkers. I don't know. I don't really like it, but and I love, like, De Palma is definitely probably one of my favorite directors, so I can easily watch that and enjoy it. But I just think, you know, there's a lot of clunky things going on in that whole thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
for sure.
I still like that probably, one. And later De Palma that I really like is Raising Cain. That movie is
Raising Cain is awesome. Unbelievable. Kerry is just amazing. And that was like one of the first ones that Pino Donaggio did with De Palma. And I think Bernard Herrmann, I think, was supposed to do that, the Kerry soundtrack, but I think he like died like right before it or something like that.
See, there was that was another one. I was like, I got to put a Herrmann score in here, and then
same, yeah, I know. Like, obviously, all the Hitchcock ones are just like, there's so many. That's, you know, that's why I was trying to make it like at least a little more personalized.
I had Taxi Driver in there too.
Unbelievable, yeah, Taxi Driver.
And I love that Taxi Driver and Maniac in my mind were going good together because they both have a little bit of actual movie dialogue in the scores.
Yeah, yeah. So Blade Runner would be another good soundtrack to throw out there, I guess, that I don't think that wasn't in my actual list, but that was one I wanted to make sure to point out. You know,
we should have just made lists of 100 and we could have just sat back here and fired names back.
Probably that. Yeah. Like I said, like today I had a mental note in my head. I was like, all right, these are probably the five that would make most sense or most important to me, I guess. And then when I went to go, you know, over the shelves to pull them out, I started seeing other ones and then other avenues of stuff. And I'm like, oh man, like, you know, putting a little more thought into it. Not saying I didn't want to put thought into it, but you know, it's easier to go with what's off the top of your head than like really overthinking things. You know what I mean? Because
yeah, you get lost down trails too.
Yeah. You know,
I started playing horror movie scores. It was all horror movie scores.
Exactly. And then
I
was, yeah. Oh,
I got to pull out of this a little bit. So.
Same, you know, it's good, you know, like, so it's, you know, I was just trying to keep it a good mix of stuff that for me myself that, you know, I mean, Enter the Dragon probably, I guess, would be the one I'd round it out with, even though I had that as like in my mentionable pile. I mean, that movie and the soundtrack both are just like so good. You know what I mean? Like Lalo Schifrin, just like, you know, I don't know. That one has to be like there. And it's part of one of the most iconic movies ever. You know what I mean? You know, Dirty Harry's really good too. I don't know. There's a lot. There's a lot.
See, if you mentioned Lalo Schifrin, I had Bullet in my stack too.
Well, yeah, see, that's what I mean. Bullet's really good. Like, really? You know, it's just a lot. As I said, I kept on, you know, seeing stuff like, you know, Escape from New York, that's another really amazing one, you know what I mean? And then it's like, okay, the John Carpenter ones, like Halloween and Assault on Precinct 13, you know, it's kind of like...
Too, the whole list could be Carpenter. It's like...
Exactly, you know.
Which is why I ended up steering out of him, too, because it's like, I could just bring five Carpenters and call it a wrap.
Exactly, it's, you know, so... It's tough. I mean, yeah, it's hard. You know, I'm like terrible at like when people are like, hey, what's your favorite song? Or what are you listening to right now? Or like stuff like that. It's just, I get stumped very quick because I think I listen to so much stuff all across the board. It's really hard for me to like channel like a proper list to people sometimes that would, you know. Yeah.
So is that your number five?
I had like The Conversation as my number five because I really like it.
And it was also an awesome one. Fuck.
Yeah. It wasn't on vinyl until recently. Trunk Records just released it a couple years ago. But before that, it wasn't on vinyl. It was only on CD. But the movie and the music in it's just, I mean, that the piano melody is just like hypnotic. And I would use it to fall asleep to if I wasn't watching TV. It's actually great to fall asleep to. But that's good. David Shire did that one. He also did the original Taken of the Pelham 1-2-3, which is a really good soundtrack. That also wasn't properly on vinyl until like the 90s.
Did you ever see the record? I can't remember who released it. I actually almost brought it and then was like, well, this doesn't count. But I was going to bring it as like a fucking the wild card. But like, there's a DJ Premier record that's all just Premiere Beats when he mixed in movie samples, taking a Pelham 123 is one of them. I'll take a picture of it when I get home if you haven't seen it. It's I think it's called Planet of the Beats. It's written like Planet of the Apes, and I think it's Planet of the Beats.
Oh, really?
It's
called. And then
they did another one that was Return to the Planet of the Beats with Mixmaster Mike, which is not near as good. But
is it actually Premiere doing it, or is it somebody using Premiere Beats with?
If I understand correctly from looking, because I was like, what the fuck is it? I found it and I was like, what the fuck is this? And if I understand it correctly, Premiere did, it was actually, these were done with Premiere and Mixmaster Mike that they were.
Oh, no shit. Okay. Damn. Look at that.
But yeah, that I almost brought that just because it was filled with 70s movie samples.
That's crazy.
It's super cool. When I get home, I'll shoot you a picture of it so you can go find one.
Yeah. It's kind of alarming that I don't know about it, but you know.
Yeah, both of them are really good. Obviously, when you have one that's Premiere, it's better than the Mixmaster mic. Yeah, but both of them are really cool to have for sure.
Well, it's funny, Mixmaster Mike had a record in the 90s. I'm drawing a blank on what it was called. It was like a kind of like a DJ album. He put it out independently, but he used the Dirty Harry theme on there, and it was just awesome. He had like Dirty Harry and he was cutting up he wasn't cutting up, he was using dialogue from Enter the Dragon and cutting in between it in the background. You know, this is probably like 96 or something like that, 97. And I just remember being blown away. You know, I was like, holy shit, like, you know, hearing, you know, the Enter the Dragon movie dialogue intercut between, you know, theme to Dirty Harry, and then also just like Mixmaster Mike cutting like crazy. I was like, you know, there's definitely some out there stuff. And it wasn't like over the music was very loose. Like, you know, like it was when, you know, a hip hop producer would use like, let's say the Dirty Harry theme, they're going to put it in the context of like a clean, you know, hip hop beat, like very, you know, four on the floor or whatever, like a four bar sequence. I mean, you know, cut up nicely to you know, the metronome track. Whereas, you know, this thing I felt was like he was just like playing the soundtrack and having these movies. It was just very loose and like very freeform. So I was kind of like, that's like pretty bugged out the way he did it. That always stuck with me when I think about Mixmaster Mike. I know a lot of people, you know, he's obviously Beastie Boys DJ, and I think is he Cypress Hills DJ now?
Yeah, he's Cypress Hills DJ now. So also, on record, I wasn't bagging on Mixmaster. Oh, no. I'm just, when you got Mixmaster Mike and DJ.
Oh, no, dude, I know. No, trust me, I worship the ground.
You're holding two records, you're putting one down. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going with Premiere, trust me. I gotcha. Okay. Absolutely.
I do love Mixmaster Mike and the Beastie Boys.
Yeah, it's just, no, it's funny.
I just want to be clear in the moment, though, primo on top.
Of course, yeah, yeah, dude, I 100% agree with you. I guess it was just funny, because I think when anytime Mixmaster Mike's mentioned, I literally think about that moment. Like, that's the first thing I think about in relation to him. It's not like the countless other things he's done that's, you know, brought him worldwide fame. It's like this one record he put out that, you know, is literally just like, you know, this off the wall record of just, it's like a nice little cut and paste record, I guess, of, you know, movies and stuff like that, you know.
So my last pick for 12 inches anyway is the Rec Room for a Dream soundtrack. I actually picked something else, but what I picked, Sequoia, was completely, it was like, I don't know what that is. You know what, here's a list of five records. Only God Forgives was on it also.
Oh,
I was
like, really good, really good.
Ghost in the Shell was on it. What else is on there? Only Lovers Left Alive was on it.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre
was on really it. He picked good. Requiem for a Dream. Yeah. Okay. So since you picked Requiem for a Dream, go.
Oh, thank you. You know, I listened to the soundtrack again today because I hadn't heard it, because that's a movie I've watched once and I told myself I loved it, but I will never watch it again.
Yeah.
And I wanted to refamiliarize myself with it, but just listening to that soundtrack, man, I mean, it just agitated me. It's a good soundtrack, but I mean, especially the scene towards the end where everyone's life is falling apart, and I can't get the line "ass to ass" out of my head. Like, that whole scene.
Yeah.
That and it was Ellen Burstyn having the shock treatment applied to her.
No, it's a stressful movie. That whole sequence you're talking about, it's like one of the most stressful parts. Like, it is, you know. He's great, though. Clint Mansell is awesome. Like, he did Black Swan, you know, and Stoker, which that movie's awesome if you haven't seen Stoker. Stoker's unbelievable.
Stoker soundtrack was in the fucking pile.
Well, yeah, that one, see, that's, you know, with certain composers, too, you can kind of like, you know, you kind of start looking through the stuff you have in there, and you're like, oh, I could pick five of just from this guy. You know, the Moon soundtrack's really good too, and movie. But Requiem for a Dream is a good call. And I hear you. It is one you can watch it once and enjoy it. And there's like, I'm like that with the Joker, the most recent one. My friend Trevor and Mark, they absolutely love it. They've seen it probably like five times. And I finally got around to watching it. I watched it once. I enjoyed it. And I, you know, I remember texting them both. I was like, okay, I saw it, and I have no reason to ever watch that movie ever again.
I was reading on, I re-listened to the, because I, Anything That Got Picked, I went ahead and replayed amongst a number of other records. But I was reading about the making of that, and two things I didn't know was that Clint Mansell was hanging around and living in New Orleans and working on it in Trent Reznor's studio, which as soon as I read that, I was like, oh, that makes sense when you start thinking about the sound on that score. And the other thing that I didn't know was that originally they, Clint and Darren, were talking about the whole score being hip hop. And they originally cut the scene with Ellen Burstyn meticulously cleaning her house on pills to she watched Channel Zero. And then they saw it and they actually loved it and it was what they wanted, but then they felt like it lacked like emotional connection, and so they pulled out and started actually making a score. But originally that was their plan, was to do all hip hop.
Dude, that would have been fucking crazy.
Yeah. Actually, I would love to see whatever that cut of that scene is.
That's pretty crazy.
But even then, like when they didn't, but you still hear the hip hop influence in that soundtrack too. Like,
man,
like the first track on the soundtrack is of course the most depressing part, the cue that comes up over and over and over and makes you want to go kill yourself. And then the second cue, which they bring back over and over again, is the, you know, the kind of like dancey hip hop.
Yeah.
And that they reprise that over and over in it, so there is still like an element of hip hop in there.
But. Sure, but it's definitely not Public Enemy.
That's definitely not to watch Channel Zero now. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
not. Yeah. Those are two things I thought were real interesting.
It's good you brought up Trent Reznor because he has a ton of soundtracks that are just, you know, unbelievable. So
that little redo of the Halloween theme that he did you listen to that? It's like a little
I think Sacred Bones put it. Is that the one Sacred Bones put out?
Yeah. That is fucking scary.
He's unbelievable, dude. He's crazy, you know.
I mean, that's already a great, I mean, the Halloween score is already fantastic, but yeah, that version is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, really good.
All right, so you and I both have a 7-inch left.
We do. I have, what do I have? I had a three-way tie, but I guess because I wasn't sure, you know, because I think things in the middle did get a little bit off track, I guess, as far as we're both throwing in handfuls of movies at a time. So so I did have a couple 7-inches that, you know, I think Suspiria was probably my top choice just because it wasn't in the albums. And I think it's definitely one of the most iconic soundtracks. And for me, it kind of has all the right ingredients between, like, you know, it's kind of got a little slow build happening, creepy vocals, has this like real like pretty, you know, main line happening, and then all of a sudden it, like, you know, halfway through breaks into kind of some like psych rock stuff. It's just, it's a good, the theme is just great. The My Goblin, sorry, I'm like, yeah. So that would be the number one choice, but I had a tie between like Daughters of Darkness theme, which is also on 7-inch. It's by Francois de Robet. I'm probably massacring the poor guy's name, but the original title to the soundtrack's obviously in French as well, but I'm not going to attempt that. But it's called Daughters of Darkness. It's from 71. That's like kind of like an underground, like deep cut, but it's a good one. And one I got recently, I know I'm going three here, but was The Stone Killer. It just got released on 7-inch by Dynamite Cuts. You can still get that pretty much anywhere. But they just put out the theme, the Roy Budd theme on a 7-inch for The Stone Killer, which is incredible. So, but I'll go with Goblin. Is like, that's like the choice. That's what I'm going with. The other two were just, I kind of had them pulled out here, had them aside as like, you know, let me see what I'm saying before this to see if these things make sense to kind of put a nice little period on everything we're talking about. But
we got to print the tour merch for the last Goblin tour.
No shit.
Yeah. That was,
all right. Those things.
You like look at the email and you wonder what the fuck you did. Jesus. Like, how did I get this lucky?
Now the lineup now is what? It's like,
so we did, because they've splintered, we did Simonetti's Goblin.
Okay, oh nice, okay, dope, nice, okay.
So, and then awesome coincidence, are you familiar with the Japanese band Boris?
Yep.
They were in town, and I desperately wanted to do. I wanted to work with Boris Terrible Bad because they're one of my favorite bands of all time. And they happened to be here the day we were printing Goblin merch, and we were already talking. And it was just like one of those, you know, like great tie-ins. We happened to be running all these amazing-looking full-color Goblin shirts as Boris walks through, and those guys all are mega Goblin fans.
Sure, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I am 100% sure that helped me a lot. Like when they all walked through the room and saw these Goblin shirts being printed, I'm pretty sure that that was the, you know, whatever put it over the edge to getting to do a Boris store was from that good fortune.
That's dope, man. That's really good.
All right, I'm going to admit to something that I haven't admitted to in public before. This is The Legend of Hell House.
Okay, okay.
You seen this? Have you seen the movie before? Okay, it's 73. Yeah, it's scary as shit. I actually rewatched this with my wife last night. But okay. Dahlia Derbyshire, amazing little score. You can't get it, and it's because it's not really available. So this is, I found where a dude I know. Yeah, he had isolated the moments without talking and assembled it.
I
took that and I
oh, okay, shit.
See these, and yeah, I figure that I can admit.
Yeah. What's the shit? Can I see the jacket? It looks like, oh, it's a gatefold.
So I did. Yeah, the jackets are screen printed.
Jesus.
And then we did, I actually, to go completely overboard, had my friend Mike write, you can't really see it, the lights.
Yeah, I had
liner notes.
Oh, dude, wow.
So
when did you do this?
I did this a number of years ago, and then they were just like lathe cuts. So I found a dude.
Okay, gotcha.
And I did 60 lathe cuts.
Oh, okay.
Hired my friend Hugo to do the art on the front there and put these out. And then to further tie in a funny coincidence, Clint Mansell, he picked, you know, Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
Clint Mansell is one of the people that bought these. So, which is just like,
blew my
mind. Like, yeah. Clint Mansell bought these. Cause there's have you heard of he specializes in soundtracks. He's like a record distro called Two-Headed Dog. And so,
Oh yeah. Of course, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
He grabbed some of these for me and then texted me and was like, "Yo, Clint Mansell just bought one of those."
That's awesome.
I like kind of stared at that for a while and was like, get the fuck out of here. But
that's really cool.
If I have an extra one of these, because I tucked a few away, if I have an extra one, I'll give you one.
Dude, I would love one. Yeah, that's actually really cool, man.
So how would you say your love of soundtracks and has influenced you as a DJ, especially in Czarface?
Oh, I think it is definitely with the music. I think with production, probably a bulk of, I don't know, my career, I guess, musically has been based around soundtracks for sure, as far as sampling them or, my partner, Jeremy Page, who I work with closely on the Czarface music. A lot of the stuff that we're doing is essentially kind of, recreating some, like, a lot of soundtrack stuff, a lot of library stuff, basically recreating my beats, in a new sense, because, my limitations are pretty much just with samplers and records, whereas he's able to, play things out and add more texture and layers to stuff. So, soundtracks have definitely shaped my, my outlook on how I do music, I guess, as a whole.
Czarface records are less a collection of songs and more cohesive. Like I definitely hear it, an outsider looking
in. Oh, cool. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. And we kind of try to do that as well to make every album, somewhat of a different experience. I think there's been a couple in the middle, like the Ghostface record. There's definitely stuff on there I would have changed, I think, in hindsight. But I think, most of the records we've had, though, we try to make them a standalone piece, in the sense of, like, if you're new to hearing Czarface, or if you're, a longtime fan, we're making a good impression either way. Like, if you're just hearing about us and you're hearing a record, hopefully it's met, welcomed. And if you're a fan who's heard all of our stuff, we try to do something new every time that's like switching it up and, giving something different. So it's kind of the same with soundtracks, whether it's an action movie or a horror movie or whatever it is, the composer, who you might be a fan of, you're getting his, what you like from him, but just in a different context. So loosely, that's what, we kind of try to, we try to do. It's harder work when it, not harder in a bad way, but when, we did the record with MF Doom and Ghostface, when working with other artists, while it is our vision and what we're trying to do, we still kind of have to, like, bend ourselves a little bit to, like, what they kind of want for the final product as well. Cause it is a collaboration. You know what I mean? We're not just, like, taking the vocals and running, So that's kind of why I think in the, the sense of, for me personally, there would have been certain things I would have liked to have done differently. Not saying that the product that came out is bad or anything, but, looking back type thing. But yeah, I mean, I think, it is done through the lens of, like, treating each record like a movie, or, this is the score to the, every hero needs a villain. This is the kind of music that would happen in this universe. And we kind of more recently have been branching out, not branching out, but we've been more exploring, like, doing comic book stuff and, and spending a little more time with that. We've kind of been talking to some animators about doing stuff. So we are trying to put as much into Czarface, the character, as we are with the music of it. So with that, I think on the other side, music will lend just as much as, will be, pretty prevalent in what's going on with that,
I collect the read-along records too.
What started it, I think... I think we did it. We just wanted to do it. The first Weapon Drawn, when we did that, it was for Record Store Day. So we were kind of like, all right, this is like a little bit under the radar. I think a few people we were talking to about it, they got it, but they didn't get it at the time. And then once it came out, it was it had a great reception with our fans and new fans and people who are fans of, like, the old Power records and comic books in general. So that in particular was, like, really charged us to, completely, you know, do whatever we want. I think when we first started doing Czarface, we were like, or at least I was like, if we're going to do this, we're just going to do it. We're not going to really try to conform into, you know, what we think's going on right now in music or whatever it is. We're just making music that we like, that we're going to particularly have fun with. And I think we did that, especially with the first two albums. And then it was at that point we were like, well, let's try to explore, you know, everything else we're into. Obviously, Esoteric's a giant comic book fan. You know, as is L'Amour Supreme, who does the art for all the Czarface stuff. You know, as well as Deck, obviously. Like, that's what Esso and Deck had bonded on, you know, even way back when we did Speak in Real Words in the 90s, was, you know, just, you know, kind of affinity for comics. So, yeah. So I think with that, you know, and I referenced the first two albums because I think right after that is when we kind of went full blown, like, well, let's do everything we want to do, you know, and some things have taken a backseat over the years. Cause you know, we're constantly releasing music. We have some records for this year planned. We're just kind of obviously waiting for things to, you know, go the way they're going to go in the world and kind of make a plan at that point. But we had two projects that, we're slated for this year. One will absolutely be coming out. We just don't know when, maybe for sometime in the fall. But yeah, it's definitely been, you know, soundtracks more than ever, I think now have become, you know, much more part of what I'm doing, you know, what I want to be doing as well. You know,
well, that's how I feel about you guys' newest record, especially because it's such a different, like that record. It's like you, again, going back to like, you like a specific composer and, you know, like, but in a different movie, he's going to play it a different way, be it an action movie.
That's
or
cool.
Or,
yeah, yeah.
And that's how I felt when I heard The Odds Are, because yeah, it was like, it's a whole different thing, but it's like you guys, like, I yeah, hear it and it doesn't sound foreign.
Thank this you. Is, yeah, yeah, that's,
but yeah, it's a whole different animal.
Yeah, obviously, you know, we love all the records we do, but I think The Odds Are for me is probably my favorite. I mean, Every Hero was special because it just, you know, it hit at a good time. Like when Czarface first came out, you know, we kind of had no expectations really. We were just like, we're going to do this one record and, you know, I don't know, just go do something else. Or, you know, we just kind of put it out. We, you know, we kind of, and, you know, it kind of took on a little bit of life of its own. So the second record, I felt we really like went in and you know, double down on what we did on the first record, and you know, it's grown since. And I think in the middle period of it, you know, maybe I think for myself, I was getting caught up in like trying to, you know, stick with a certain kind of sound or a style or whatever it was. And I think after the Ghost record, you know, I had all these kind of beats that were out, you know, a little bit not traditional Czarface, like Dear Computer, you know, Call Me, stuff like that, that was just kind of beats that we all liked, that we were like, well, shit, why don't we just try to, you know, not try, but why don't we record these now and see, you know, see what it is. And the album came together, I think, you know, it came together quickly in a good way. Just like everything worked, you know, like throwing beats on, trying goofy ideas that just worked. And yeah, it's probably the one I'm most pleased with, I think, in our catalog. For the reason, like you said, it's different for what we've been doing, but it's still a Czarface record, and like that's what I kind of appreciate about it. And you know, it was, you know, again, it's kind of, I felt it's like recharging us a little bit into you know, into the next phase of what we're going to be doing. You know what I mean? So I mean, we have a really big record this year, so I just, you know, I want to make sure that the world is healed a little bit before we make announcements or do anything. So, you know, that is something to look forward to.
You guys' inclusion of the comic books and then you mentioned the Power records. I love those. I got the Fantastic Four one and I got the Planet of the Apes one with the, what's got all four Planet of the Apes movies. Trimmed down to a 12 inch record. But like, but the inclusion of that kind of packaging is like, cause you know, my son, you know, as a son would, generally finds whatever dad likes distasteful.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, at first they find whatever dad likes, oh yeah, you know, dad's cool, and then all of a sudden dad's a dork, and So, but the inclusion of that stuff is why we can ride to school together. And we literally, like, I'd say, you know, 8 out of 10 times we're playing Czarface while I'm driving him to school. I drive him to school half the week and my wife gets the other half. So like, but it was the comics itself. Like I, you know, as soon as the comic was in the one record, he was like reading the comic and then the read along record. And the and he grew up around those anyway, because my wife and I both have tons of kids records, and you know, the record even fits in the sleeve in the back. And I have a great picture, I'll have to send it to you, of my son in his robe, fresh out of the shower, with his hair slicked back, with his feet up, reading this comic.
Oh, that's
it's the greatest. You know, like I refer to him in that mode as Hugh Hef, because he's every time he gets out of the shower, his hair slicked straight back.
That's hilarious.
Take that picture up and send it to you. It's unbelievably funny. But yeah, that was what allowed him to bond on that shit and like it. Whereas normally I'm like, what do you think of this? And he's like, I don't like it. Like, or he'll shrug it and, you know, not, you know, and then play me something horrible that I don't like. But yeah, that's one of the few ones that he and I share. And I think it's the packaging and the art, and I've loved watching like that you guys have kept this cohesive look throughout the whole thing, because it feels, it's less like this group I like, it's like an ongoing story, the character, like everything developing the way you guys have has just been genius.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I mean, you know, I'd like to say it was all planned, but I think a lot of it is we're kind of just like we are making it up as we go along, you know. So I think, you know, we had so when we were doing the Doom record, we knew it was going to probably be out in a year and a half, if not longer, just based off of the back and forth of how we were working with him. And, you know, he was in Grenada, you know, he's not in the States, but he was, you know, he was in other parts of the world. So some of the communication would fall off, and, you know, he would disappear for months at a time. So we would kind of, we knew that was going to be the next record we were going to release. So we were more or less like, well, we're going to have a lot of time before this comes out. So we don't want to put out another Czarface record, because we had done Fistful Apparel. So we were kind of like, well, you know, let's try out, I don't know, an instrumental record. Or we thrown around different ideas, and we kind of came up with the Power, you know, like the comic book record idea. Just like, I don't know, let's see if this could work. You know, I'll say financially, it obviously wasn't, you know, anything crazy, because, you know, like to pay artists and the production of all that kind of stuff, is I'm sure you guys are familiar with, there's really not a lot of headroom. No, and that's not why, you know, we obviously, I don't think we do any of what we do for is a financial motivation, even though it's that's helpful. But we had done that, and I remember once it was done and it actually came out, was in my hands, it was, you know, it was as satisfying as when we did the first Czarface record. Because when we did that record, you know, again, we had no expectations. We were kind of, you know, we're going to do this record. And once it kind of came together and came out, I just remember holding it with the pop-up. You know, the initial CD had a limited pop-up in it. And just being kind of like, you know, smiling to myself a little bit, which I think I rarely do with most of the stuff I'm involved with. You know, and kind of just being happy with it. I think with the Power Records one, you know, not to always refer to it as that, but the first Weapon Drawn record was, you know, that was definitely one that I was like, oh man, this is like, it completely opened our eyes to like, you know, other things we can do or possibilities we can do. And I think since that, it just kind of happens, you know, you just kind of roll with it. So, you know, and that's part of the fun of it, I think. So,
right, we'll do something and it'll go right. And I mean, Joel's sitting on the other side of the room, and it's usually party to these things. But like, you'll do something that's a one-time thing, and it goes right, and then it's fun, and then you think of 20 ways to spin it. So it's like, yeah, it's the same for us. Like, where I'm like, that didn't happen. That wasn't planned.
Yeah. Sure. <wasn't>. Like. But it's, you know, like I agree. It's also, you know, it's good when you can get in that kind of space where you can let things happen a little bit, you know, a little more organically, and just kind of see what, you know, see what you come up with out of it, you know. You know, because like I said, we have some stuff for later in the year that we do have on hold for a little bit.
that I think is, you know, it's going to be exciting, I think, for whatever we have going on in the Zarface universe. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
We're excited to hear it. And thanks so much for taking the time to do this.
Yeah, no, and, thank you. You know, and again, I, you know, please feel free to edit however you feel. I think I either ramble a lot or I repeat myself a lot. So, you know, I trust you guys to make me sound well-polished and all that, you know.
We're going to do The Simpsons where they re-edit Homer.
Yeah. yes, do that. Please do that. Please.
when we get done, we're just going to sample all your words, cut it up, and make you into a monster.
Go for it. Go for it, please.
No, seriously, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking the time today to do this. This is good. So,
and thank you for doing our intro for our podcast.
Oh, yeah, dude, that was a lot of fun. You know, as you can see, I went back a few times with different examples.
I would play it for everyone, and everyone would be like, oh, that's dope. And then I'd be like, yeah, I told him that's good. Let's finish it. And then I would come back and be like, no, he gave me this.
Yeah. So,
even on the fourth one, I was like, well, that's different than the
yeah. But the one that you guys, that was the final version, I'm actually like, yeah, pretty, you know, I was very pleased with the outcome. So, you know.
We were too, dude. I legitimately, every time you handed me another one, I was like, oh, shit, that's better. Okay, yeah, do that one.
Yeah, no.
Finally hanging in the best one. So.
Thank you for the opportunity. You know, that's kind of how we work sometimes. So, you know, with our music, I think the way we do stuff is when I send a beat to SO or Deck, the final outcome is usually, you know, 4 or 5 generations after whatever we started with. So you kind of got a little inside peek at the process of how we do things. So.
Awesome, man. Well, we'll let you get, but thanks again. This
thank is awesome. Yeah, you guys be safe and stay healthy.
Take care, man.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
I'm getting some very strange reports from C-Bay, though.
In what way is strange?
Holy Mountain Printing Podcast.